83. Strathcona. And you're writing your thesis on Baptists, Mr. Milgram? Mrs. Meisenhalter set a 2-slice silver toast rack on the table. Anabaptists, Milgram corrected. These are really delicious scrambled eggs. I use water rather than butter, she said. The pan is a little more trouble to clean, but I prefer them that way. Anabaptists? They do come into it, yes, Milgram said, breaking his first piece of toast. Though really I'm concentrating on revolutionary messianism.
Georgetown, you say?
Yes.
That's in Washington.
It is. We're delighted to have a scholar with us, she said. Though as far as he knew, she managed this bed and breakfast on her own, and he seemed to be the only guest. I'm happy to have found such a quiet and pleasant place, he said. And he was. He'd wandered through a deserted Chinatown into what Mrs. Meisenhalter told him was the city's oldest residential neighborhood. Not a very affluent one, that was evident, but it was also evident that that was starting to change. A place in the process of doing what Union Square had done, he guessed. Mrs. Meisenhalter's bed and breakfast was part of that transition. If she could get guests in to help her pay for it, she might do very well later when things had gone upscale.
"Do you have plans for the day, Mr. Milgram?"
"I have to see to my lost luggage," he said. "If it hasn't turned up, I'll need to do a little shopping."
"I'm sure they'll find it, Mr. Milgram. If you'll excuse me, I have to see to the laundry."
When she had gone, Milgram finished his toast, carried his breakfast things to the sink, rinsed them, and went up to his room. The thick, flat sheaf of hundreds, like an oddly shaped paperback, in the left side pocket of his Joseph A. Banks trousers. It was the only thing he'd kept from the purse, aside from the phone, a small LED flashlight, and a pair of Korean-made nail clippers. The rest, including whatever that was that the phone had been plugged into, he'd deposited in a red mailbox. She hadn't had any Canadian cash, the handsome, vaguely familiar-looking woman on the New York State driver's license, and credit cards were more trouble than they were worth. He needed to buy a loupe today, and a small ultraviolet light, a currency-testing pen, if he could find one. The bills looked good, but he needed to make sure. He'd already seen 2 signs declining American hundreds. But first, the secret flagellants of Thuringia, he decided, sitting on the edge of the candlewick bedspread and loosening the laces of his shoes. His book was in the drawer of the bedside table, along with the phone, his U.S. government pen, the flashlight, and nail clippers. His place in the book was marked with the only scrap of the envelope he'd kept, the upper left-hand corner marked H.H. in faint red ballpoint. It seemed part of something, somehow. He remembered getting on the bus the night before, with the purse under his arm, beneath his jacket. He'd already gotten change at the Princeton, as planned earlier, had inquired about buses and fares, and had had exactly the right amount ready in unfamiliar, oddly blank-looking coins. He'd sat, almost the only passenger, midway back by a window, while his hand, as stealthy as if expecting attack, had explored what at first had seemed the very ordinary and unpromising reaches of the purse. Now, rather than picking up the book, he picked up the phone. It had been on when he'd found it, and he'd immediately turned it off. Now he turned it on. A New York number. Roaming. Almost a full charge. The phone book seemed to list mostly New York numbers as well, by first names only. The ring was set for silent. He set it on vibrate to be sure that it was working. It was. He was about to silence it again when it began to vibrate in his hand. His hand opened it and put it to his ear. "Hello," he could hear someone, a man, saying. "Hello." "You have the wrong number," he said in Russian. "This is definitely the correct number," said the man on the other end, in accented but serviceable Russian. "No," said Milgram, still in Russian, "it is the wrong number. Where are you, Thuringia?" He closed the phone, immediately opening it again and turning it off. His hand opted for the morning's second rise, entirely reasonable under the circumstances. He put the phone back in the drawer. It didn't seem a good thing to have kept now. He'd dispose of it later. He was opening his book, ready to pick up where he'd left off on the story of Margrave Frederick the Undaunted, when he suddenly saw St. Mark's Place, that past October. He'd been talking with Fish in front of a used record store, the sort of place that actually sold records, the vinyl kind, and through the window, in black and white, a woman's face had regarded him from the wall. And for an instant, settling back on the pillows, he knew who that was, and that he also knew her in some different way. But then he began to read.